live in Lansing every afternoon with Cheryl Fritz. This is Fritz and Friends on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Scott Eckersley filling in for Cheryl today. Well, we've heard from both sides of the aisle on the ongoing budget process in the Capitol. Now to get some additional perspective on a hectic legislative week, I'm talking to Inside Michigan Politics editor Bill Ballinger. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Glad to be with you.
So some are saying things are moving too quickly. These budgets are being passed at just such a fast rate. Although aren't legislators simply doing what they would typically do in October, just moments ahead of the deadline?
Well, we've gotten used to them doing it, unfortunately, in October, but that's not the way it's supposed to be. They're actually doing now what used to be done routinely right up until the mid-1960s or 70s. Now it's gotten to the point where these budget wars drag out all through the summer and into the fall. That hasn't been the norm for most of Michigan political history, so they're really getting back to doing now what they used to do.
Is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. Look, most states, you got to remember, have what are known as part-time legislators, meaning they've got to get their budgets passed and get out of the state capitol by May or June at the latest every year. Most states. Michigan is very unusual in having a so-called year-round legislature and taking all this time to get its business done. And frankly, from what we've seen the last few years, the results have not been so great that you could make an argument that you profit by having 3 or 4 or 5 months of extra time to work on it.
You know, I talked to Mark Meadows earlier. He said a lot of Michiganians, working people, don't really know or don't have a sense of what the impact is going to be from these cuts. But once they get a better sense of it, there will be a bigger reaction. Do you expect the same thing?
I don't know, quite frankly. I mean, look, if you are the Democrats and you're in the minority and you oppose everything that Rick Snyder and the Republican majority is trying to accomplish, you're going to make the argument that Mark Meadows has just made to you. He may be right, but we don't know yet. In fact, he may be dead wrong. And we may decide or find out in the fall or next year that, frankly, most people really don't seem to see a huge difference between the way things have been done for the last few years and its impact in schoolrooms and college campuses and other places and the situation now or in the next 12 months.
Yeah, there's been concern, even pending legislation to penalize teachers for striking. But when you look at these actions that are ongoing and the bills that are being passed, do teachers and do unionized workers, do they have any real power here?
Well, look, it's against the law to strike, period. It always has been. There have been periodic efforts to put more teeth in the law and make it more difficult for teachers to even try to strike, even though it's legally illegal to strike. And now there are renewed efforts to, you know, put more criminal sanctions into the law for anybody who would try to strike who's a public employee. It's not a good idea to even talk about striking. Nobody likes strikes. And I think, quite frankly, if the teachers did try to strike, either in mass, statewide, or on a district-by-district basis, I think it's likely to backfire.
And what do you think of this tie vote in the Senate on the K-12 budget that required Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly's vote to pass? When you see a dynamic like that, what do you see there?
Well, I will say this. The votes in both chambers, I mean, on the Senate side, you're right, it was a deadlock, 19-19. Republicans have a huge majority in the Senate, 26-12. 7 Republicans defected and voted with the Democrats. And so it was a 19-19 deadlock. It takes 20 votes to pass. And so Brian Kelly had to cast a tie-breaking vote. That is pretty unusual. That means that there are a lot of nervous Republicans in the Senate who thought this particular budget, but remember, this was the spending bill on how much is being spent on K-12 education. They thought it was too draconian what the governor and most Republican senators were advocating. Now, on the House side, the vote, again, was very close, 56 to 53. That's a bare majority. Nobody had to break a tie. You don't have a lieutenant governor presiding over the House. But again, there were, I think, seven Republicans who defected and voted with the Democrats. Every single Democrat in the House voted to redo the tax structure for Michigan. This was a tax revenue providing move in the House, whereas it was a spending move in the Senate. But both votes coming from two different directions on the two major subjects were razor close majorities that the Republicans barely won.
Which shows a level of resistance that might surprise some people.
Yeah, I think some people thought, you know, number one, if the Republicans have these big majorities, they're all in lockstep, and they're just going to roll over the Democrats, and it's not even going to be close. Well, it shows that, you know, there weren't any so-called blue dog Democrats or moderate or conservative Democrats crossing over and voting for the Snyder Republican agenda, whether it's spending money on schools or whether it was reforming the tax structure. The Democrats were rock solid, unanimous, opposed. Not one single defecting Democrat. That's quite remarkable. It was the Republicans who suffered the defections, and yet they had enough majority strength in each chamber that were still able to pass the bills.
Meanwhile, the governor announcing this new vision for schools in Michigan with some real fundamental changes. He describes the current system as being from the 19th century. Is Snyder the right man at the right time, or is he ahead of his time?
Well, look, if you're for reform of the education system in Michigan, I don't think you can say Snyder is ahead of his time, because a lot of reformers have been arguing for years that the things that Snyder is talking about doing right now should have been done years ago. In other words, you could say, finally, we've got a governor who has said, let's step up to the plate and do these reforms. Now, having said that, if you are opposed to what Snyder is proposing and opposed to these so-called reforms, and remember, when we talk about reforms, we're talking about things like teacher tenure, reforming that, making it easier to get rid of so-called bad teachers, merit pay, rewarding good teachers. You're talking about enhanced cross-district school choice. You're talking about a lot of things that the educational community, particularly the Michigan Education Association, the Michigan Federation of Teachers, do not like and oppose strenuously. So as far as they're concerned, everything Snyder is doing is too soon. They wish Snyder had never come along, and they are wishing and hoping that no other governor would ever come along in the past, now, or in the future that would propose doing these things, because they think they're an abomination.
I'm talking to Inside Michigan Politics editor Bill Ballinger. So for those who said that without a political background, Governor Snyder would struggle when he was confronted by the political realities of Lansing, is it safe to say that he was greatly underestimated?
I do think he was underestimated. He's shown himself so far to be pretty adroit, at least in getting people around him on his staff who really know the score in Lansing, know how to make the legislature click and work. Yes, they suffered some defections in the House and Senate, but not enough to deny passage to his most important legislation. Snyder himself, I think, has been an important figure in the sense that, unlike the governors in some of these other states like Scott Walker in Wisconsin, maybe John Kasich in Ohio, Chris Christie in New Jersey, Snyder is not a in-your-face, confrontational, bombastic, hectoring, lecturing governor. He's just not that kind of guy. He's a very decent, gentlemanly, kindly guy, and he keeps talking this talk of moderation and consensus and everything else that kind of lulls his opponents into a false sense of security that, you know, he can't really be the villain that his policies make him look out to be. And that, you know, maybe he's just really a good guy and let's give him a chance. The fact of the matter is, though, as time goes on, they're seeing that despite his demeanor and his attitude and his approach, what he's actually doing is probably every bit as draconian and revolutionary as the things that Walker is doing in Wisconsin and Christie in New Jersey and Kasich in Ohio.
Gotcha. I see. Interesting. He's almost the ultimate politician. Inside Michigan Politics editor Bill Ballinger, thank you for joining me, Bill.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
Coming up next, we're going to look at Lansing city issues with a millage proposal on the ballot this coming Tuesday. We'll talk to Finance Director Jerry Ambrose. That's next on Fritz and Friends here on 1320 WILS.